Welcome to the PwC podcast. We're really excited to jump into this deep dive today. The source material we're looking at feels incredibly urgent, almost like it was written for this exact moment we're living in. Our mission, really, is to pull out the core wisdom here on how we can maintain our faith, find stability when, you know, the world just feels so volatile, shaken even.
It really does. And our source is the prophet Isaiah, specifically chapters 5-8.
Yeah.
When you read this section, it's striking how much Isaiah's time mirrors our own. You had the surface level of prosperity, military confidence maybe, but underneath.
Right.
A deep internal drifting, spiritually, societally, it's all there.
Okay, so let's unpack this main theme. Standing firm in a shaking world. It sounds challenging, and honestly, it is. But the sources suggest it also offers some really immediate practical steps. We're going to walk through these four chapters and see what Isaiah actually tells us we need to do to stay steady when everything else feels like it's moving. All right, chapter 5. Isaiah kicks things off with this beautiful but also quite devastating picture. An allegory, right? The song of the vineyard. God is the owner, carefully planting, tending this vineyard, his people. He did everything right. He was expecting something specific back.
He absolutely was. And the source is very clear on the kind of fruit God expected. Mm. It highlights things like love, social justice, real faithfulness, not just, you know, going through religious motions, but actual ethical living.
But that's not what happened. The yield was, well, terrible.
Yeah.
A bitter disappointment. Yeah. The fruit that actually grew was things like greed, pride, blatant injustice. It was complete betrayal of all the care the owner put in. What really jumps out is how concise the verdict is. Its stunning line really sums it up. He looked for justice, but saw bloodshed, for righteousness, but heard cries of distress.
Wow. Justice versus bloodshed. That really bridges the gap, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Between what God hoped for and what the society was actually producing. It forces us to ask, is this just about ancient Israel? Or is this holding up a mirror to us? If the fruit we produce, you know, kindness, patience, generosity, or the flip side, bitterness, selfishness, pride, if that shows the health of our roots,
yeah.
Then the question for you listening right now is, if God walked through the garden of your life today, what kind of fruit would he find?
And what's so interesting there is the focus isn't on, say, how often people showed up for worship. It was entirely on the ethical stuff, the tangible, real-world results of their faith, right? And speaking of that unhealthy garden, Isaiah doesn't just leave it at disappointment. He points fingers, identifies the problems. We get this series of six woes. Our sources call them the six weeds. Specific societal sins that just choke out any chance for good things to grow. And they feel shockingly relevant now.
Oh, absolutely. And we need to understand how sneaky these weeds are, how they work. The first one is greed. And this isn't just being wealthy. Isaiah warns about adding house to house, field to field, until there's no space left for anyone else. Today. That looks like the constant cultural push to get more, upgrade everything, that feeling that enough is always just one more purchase away, you know, never mind the needs around us.
Then the second weed, drunkenness, which isn't solely about alcohol, is it? It's more about escaping reality, choosing to numb out, flee the world's problems instead of facing them with courage and maybe turning towards God.
Exactly. Then you've got mocking God. This wasn't necessarily like organized atheism back then. It was more about treating God's truth, his moral law, like it was a joke, a kind of cynical dismissal. Today, you see that in this widespread cynicism where maybe seeking truth feels naive or being morally serious seems, I don't know, old-fashioned.
And that flows right into the next one, which feels like the core of it sometimes. Moral confusion. Calling evil good and good evil. This isn't just disagreeing on policy. It's twisting words, twisting concepts until right and wrong just lose their meaning in how we talk about things.
Which feeds the fifth weed, pride. That dangerous idea that we're self-sufficient, that we can build a good life, a meaningful life without any reference to God at all. We become our own final authority.
And the last one, corruption. Twisting justice for your own gain. Maybe back then it was obvious bribes. Today it might be hidden in complex systems or using your position, your resources, to bend the rules that were meant to protect the vulnerable.
It really brings up a huge challenge. How do you fight these? Because sin, it rarely starts loud. It's usually a hidden seed, maybe a rationalization you plant in your heart. And if you just leave it, it spreads fast, takes over everything good. That's why repentance isn't really about feeling ashamed or guilty. It's more like active gardening, you know, intentionally pulling out those weeds so the good fruit, justice, mercy can actually grow.
And that kind of spiritual gardening, that's hard work.
Yeah.
Really hard to keep up on your own. If you're hearing this call to action and thinking, yeah, I need help with that. If you feel the need for community, for people who are also trying to grow and weed together, We want to make a connection right now. We'd love to invite you to learn more. Connect with us at PWC Pittsford Wesleyan Church. We really believe that deep roots grow best together in community. Okay, now switching gears a bit from the personal garden maintenance to something much bigger, celestial even, transformative. Chapter 6, Isaiah gets his calling, a vision that completely changes his life. He sees the Lord, it says, high and exalted on a throne, heavenly beings all around crying out, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty."
And the immediate effect of seeing that pure, absolute holiness, it's just crushing self-awareness. Isaiah instantly knows how broken he is, how broken his people are. He cries out, "Woe is me, I am unclean." And that is the critical first step in any real transformation, isn't it? Seeing the gap between God's standard and our reality.
But here's the amazing part of the vision. God doesn't just leave him there, crushed and condemned. He cleanses him right away. A seraphim takes a burning coal from the altar, touches Isaiah's lips. It's a symbol of forgiveness, purification.
Which says so much about how God operates. Cleansing comes before the commission. God makes ready the people he calls. He takes that moment of complete surrender, the woe is me, and turns it into readiness. And that leads to the climax of the vision. God asks, "Whom shall I send?" And Isaiah, just cleansed, just transformed, his answer is simple, immediate. "Here am I, send me." It shows God isn't looking for the most qualified in their own eyes, but the most surrendered.
That's such a powerful idea for serving God. Transformation first, then action. But then chapter 7 just pulls us right back down to earth.
Yeah.
To messy human reality. King Ahaz is facing this huge military crisis.
Yeah, we need the history here to feel the weight of it. This is the Syro-Ephraimitic War. Two smaller kingdoms, Aram and Israel, or Ephraim, they team up. They're threatening to basically wipe out Judah, kick King Ahaz off the throne. People are panicking. It feels like the end of their world.
So God sends Isaiah straight to Ahaz with a direct command, really, a conditional promise. It's maybe the most famous line from this whole section.
It is the warning and the key to stability. If you do not stand firm in your faith, you will not stand at all. God was basically saying, look, don't fear these guys. Trust me, I've got this. Ahaz had this chance to just lean on faith and watch God work.
But he didn't take it. He chose politics, pragmatism over trust.
Exactly. His move was to ignore God's offer of security and instead reach out to the massive, ruthless superpower of the day, Assyria, for help, which was just a terrible mistake geopolitically and spiritually. He essentially traded God's peace for what he thought was temporary safety from this empire. But he ended up losing both because leaning on Assyria just led to them being dominated later.
It's a stark lesson, isn't it? Uh-huh. Choosing fear, choosing human plans over God's promise.
Mm.
You lose peace every single time. But right in the middle of that fear, that human failure, God gives this ultimate counter promise.
That's the incredible contrast. God promises the sign of Emmanuel, which means God with us. Even when leaders fail, like Ahaz did, even when threats are closing in, even when Ahaz refuses to believe, God's presence is still guaranteed. Faith means choosing to trust. He's with us, even when we can't see the outcome at all.
And that theme of trust carries right into chapter 8. Isaiah warns that the trouble Ahaz invited by calling Assyria, it's still coming. Assyria will invade like a huge, overwhelming flood.
Right, and this is where we shift from the political storm to the spiritual anchor. For those who do choose to trust God, he promises he will be their sanctuary, which makes you ask, okay, what does that mean? If God is your sanctuary, but the flood is still coming, it means the focus isn't stopping the storm. We can't always stop the floods in life. The Assyrians, the focus is on God being the steady, safe, unshakable place in the chaos, your anchor.
That idea anchor point, not flood prevention, that feels so important for today. So let's pull it all together. From the vineyard to the sanctuary, what does this ancient message mean for us living right now? Let's try to boil Isaiah's message down into maybe three actionable truths for modern life, connecting it directly to how you live day to day.
Okay. First truth, maybe coming out of chapter 5, cultivate ethical fruit, not just religious appearances. Don't just, check the boxes. Root yourself deeply in who God is by actively pursuing justice, pursuing righteousness in your own life, your own circles. Let God's word actually shape your actions, not just the shifting cultural winds.
Good. Second truth, drawing from Isaiah's vision in chapter 6, embrace radical surrender to find true readiness. When you encounter God's holiness, the first reaction might be, woe is me, a realization of your own stuff. But once he cleanses you, the next response has to be, here am I, send me. Transformation comes before deployment.
And finally, the third truth, learning from Ahaz's failure and that sanctuary promise in chapter 7 and 8. Respond with faith, not fear based on circumstances. Ahaz looked at the size of the storm, Aram and Ephraim. Then he looked at the size of the potential rescuer, Assyria. That was fear. Faith, like Isaiah urged, focuses on the stability of God's promise, Emmanuel, God with us. When everything's shaking, your anchor has to be God himself as your sanctuary.
We really can't stop the cultural winds, can we? Or the floods of global uncertainty. The shaking seems, well, inevitable sometimes. But we absolutely get to choose where we plant our roots. And those who plant deep in God's truth, who surrender to his cleansing, who choose him as their sanctuary, they will outlast the storm. They'll bear fruit that lasts.
The challenge for us right now is just to avoid making Ahaz's mistake all over again. We're tempted every day, aren't we? To rely on our finances or politics or just endless distraction to find some kind of peace. But Isaiah's reminder is so clear. Real stability only comes when we stand firm in our faith.
So as you go through your week, when things start to feel shaky, when you feel that pressure to just react or panic, try to remember this final thought. Your roots can be in a kingdom that absolutely cannot be moved. Choose to be faithful. Choose to be fruitful. Choose to be fearless, because Emmanuel, God with us, is still right beside you. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive into Isaiah. If this message connected with you, maybe share it with someone else. And maybe take some time this week to read Isaiah chapters 5-8 for yourself. You'll find the same God who stood with Isaiah is ready to stand with you today. Visit us at PWC Pittsford Wesleyan Church.
Thanks again for listening to the PWC podcast. We hope you can join us this Sunday at 11 a.m.